been all right, thanks. Up and down. Has its good moments, though. Like a daily walk around Eastfield Park and Stoke Park. So that's been pretty enjoyable. Take a big loop and seen some pretty good sights along the way. Mostly wildlife, but...
A lovely cygnet. Lovely
cygnet.
Troop of cygnets.
Lovely mandarin duck.
Yeah, the one mandarin duck in Eastfield Park.
Saw a woodpecker and some lovely heron, which the plural may or may not be herons. Might just be heron. But yeah, the big excitement relevant to this podcast is that we saw a cycling Chloe Legazzo by the lake one evening when she was obviously out for her daily exercise.
Yeah, it was quite early on in lockdown, wasn't it? We were pretty excited. We saw these flashing tattooed arms whizzing past us. And Nat said to me, is that Chloe Legazzo? And I was like, oh, actually, I think it is.
Yeah.
And then I watched the YouTube video, because I'm really sad, of her going through her tattoos. I was like, those actually were her tattoos.
So yeah, we can confirm that we saw Chloe Legazzo cycling around the lake during lockdown, which is all above board. We're not reporting her, we're just saying.
Yeah, it looked totally sanctioned.
All above board.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we were both out for our evening exercise. And it was a great moment. She's only actually played one game for us. But already I feel like she's a future legend.
Absolutely. And hopefully she'll play some more games for us. Because I think when she came to Bristol, she had a 18-month contract. I don't know what the status of that is now. I don't really know anything. I suppose that's going to be a bit of a topic of the podcast today, is speculating wildly with very little information about what is happening with Bristol City Women.
Absolutely.
But it seems to be quite a trend with what a lot of people are doing when they're talking about women's football at the moment. So, welcome to the Oxbow Revolution. This is going to be the final episode of this particular podcast. It was always intended to be a bit of an experiment to see how it would go, making a podcast, wanting to do something, with the kind of feelings of fandom, really wanting to document a moment in history as well, the moment of women's football, conversations with fans, some of the songs that we began to sing this year. I'm actually, in retrospect, I'm glad that the documentary impulse overtook me at that particular point in women's football, because, you know, who knows what's going to happen to it, and that, you know, little archive of recordings and conversations hopefully will be useful to people in the future and document that moment in time. But I think, you know, when the new season starts up again, I'm going to do a rebrand of the podcast, calling it something else, perhaps Voice of the Vixens or something, and try and, you know, change a bit how it's run. But keep an eye on that if you listen to this podcast, or even if you want to get involved, hoping to do more with it through the Bristol City Women's Supporters Club. So before we go in to talk about, just do a bit of a review of the season, we've picked out 10 of our favourite things that have happened last season, on and off the pitch. Mainly off the pitch, if I have to be honest, because last season wasn't great in a footballing sense. So we're going to be talking a bit more about that. But I just wanted to share with some of the things that I've been doing football related since lockdowns happened, because it's been a good opportunity to check in with different networks in and around the women's game who are doing research and producing interesting content around women's football. So one of those is the Football Collective, who I'd encourage you, if you're interested in academic research relating to football more broadly, but they've got a really active group of people doing stuff about women's football. So I think it's footballcollective.org.uk. They've been doing, in fact, quite early on into lockdown, they started doing all these seminars. I think they had some conferences planned, but they've been doing them online and recording them all. So there's this amazing collection of talks about issues relating to football in the present and in the past. So I went to one about, you know, kind of issues affecting football in general as a result of the COVID-19 crisis. And it was chaired by former Vixen Alex Colvin, Dr. Alex Colvin, who's just received her PhD, which in a really interesting study looking into the professionalisation of women's football over the past 10 years and the development of the WSL. And Alex has been generous to share her research with me. So I've been happily reading through some of her articles, and that's coming to be published. That content is being published over the next few years. So check that out if you're interested in some of the more, I guess, thorny issues relating to the professionalisation of the women's game. She's done a lot of interesting interviews with players. Obviously, she was a player herself, so has a very insider point of view. I also went to a kind of reminiscence event that was organised by my colleague, Helena Byrne, who works at the British Library. She's a librarian, but also a massive boff in Irish women's football. So she organised an event to commemorate the 50 years of Dundalk Ladies versus Manchester's Corinthian Nomads. That was on the 10th of May. Again, that's documented online. I'd encourage you, if you're interested in the history of women's football, to check that out. We've also been listening to the women's football show hosted by Faye Carruthers, and that's been good, hasn't it, Nat?
Yeah, it's been great. She gets some really good guests, and since the pause, as it was, in women's football, they've had some really amazing guests who are quite high up in women's football and have been speculating on what will happen next. And the conversation's been really amazing, actually. I think because there's been no actual football to talk about, they've talked about the structure of women's football a lot and really gone into some amazing detail about that. The particularly last week, I think, actually, there are two people from Women in Football who were on the show talking about things you just don't hear spoken about in women's football. So it's really fascinating. It's a really, really good bit of journalism going on.
Definitely, and a big shout out actually to all the amazing journalists who are working on women's football at the moment, Kay Wyatt and Susie Rack and Molly Hudson. Brilliant reporting, really engaged journalism, and they often appear on the women's football show. And Maggie Murphy from Lewis FC, she was on, wasn't she? Very passionate about women's football, and it's been really interesting to see their take on it because they're very vocal. Obviously, they've got equal men's and women's teams
at Lewis,
yeah. So they're very vocal in terms of kind of highlighting the commercial opportunity that the COVID-19 crisis could have presented for women's football. And I think that's something that has been, you know, it's been interesting and disheartening. And obviously, we just had the news that the Premier League is restarting, and you know, and obviously the Bundesliga has already restarted, and they've supported their women's team as well to go back and play football alongside the male Bundesliga, and that same commitment hasn't been delivered in Britain or in England, and I think that must be disappointing. And it's also been interesting to me to see how, you know, commercial opportunity has been framed in the women's game, and you know, this question of exactly what is the value of women's football to, you know, the men's team. And there's the perception among some journalists that having a women's team is like virtue signalling, is a way of, you know, signposting your commitment to equal opportunities, and that's the value that it adds to your overall brand.
It is worth saying though that the German league does function differently, doesn't it? So if, for instance, there was no Premier League, then we'd probably be talking a bit differently, because the EFL, the Premier League and the FAWSL all operate differently, whereas I'm not sure the same can be said for the Bundesliga. I think, you know, if you in Germany, I think if you did bring back men's football without women's football, that would be a inequalities issue, because I believe the structures are parallel, whereas the Premier League obviously sits very strangely outside of all other football. Obviously, like, there's a lot of talk about its power at the moment, how it, you know, the lack of support it gives to EFL teams, and how it just sits alone in this kind of money and power vacuum, almost outside of the FA's control, really. So I do think it's not just an issue of, like, women's football with this. I think it's an issue of the structure of British football, English football, because, yeah, the Premier League is a kind of, it's a league on its own. It's at the top of the pyramid, but it does operate totally differently. And you can see that all the different leagues have made very different decisions or haven't made decisions about what to do next. But the Premier League, is everything you read about it, is like, it's very much just about they need to play the games in order to receive their money from broadcasters. And without that, you know, so it's kind of, I don't know, I do think it sits slightly differently. There's much more money in the Premier League than the Bundesliga as well. So I do think it's about that primarily.
Yeah, the sort of the organisational structures aren't permitting equality, which, yeah, you know, is kind of...
Which is a problem in itself,
it's
obviously.
It's a
but
massive
it's an,
problem.
It's,
I
an
mean,
interesting, mm. it's an interesting kind of thing. So if you're going to look at other kind of European leagues that are going back, that have, you know, it's worthwhile looking at how they structure their women's league alongside their men's league and looking at that. But I mean, it's happening across other sports as well, isn't it? So kind of the men's cricket team have been invited back to solo training, but the women's haven't, and stuff like that. Whereas, you know, so yeah, it's certainly an issue across all elite sports by the looks of it.
Yes, absolutely, and it is very much the men first, because it's commercially more viable. It all comes down to the bottom line, unfortunately, and this question of what is valued. Just one final point about this. One of the things that I found very interesting about the Lewis FC's framing of the COVID crisis as a commercial opportunity, how even when they were framing opportunity in those terms and using that language and trying to talk that talk to business people rather than articulate other forms of justification for prioritising women's football in the post-COVID moment, even then, those demands or those ideas were being ignored or ultimately rejected. I think maybe before I would have thought, you know, you need to talk the business language to the business people, but I still think there's a massive, like, moral, political, you know, social case for arguing for parity for between women's and men's football. But getting distracted, you know, these things are not completely irrelevant, and we will come to Bristol in a minute, because obviously, you know, you are worried about what's going to happen with Bristol. This has raised some concerns, this situation. Don't have much information about it. At the moment, the only thing that concrete that I heard was Steve Lansdowne talking on Radio 4's Today programme. So he's the founder and majority shareholder of Bristol Sport. And he was talking actually in relation to the rugby, the men's rugby team. But obviously he has responsibility for the whole sports family within Bristol Sport, which includes Bristol City Men, Bristol City Women, Bears, all these people. And he said, you know, we plan for the worst, but we hope for the best. So, you know, that's a provocative, tantalising, scary quote when you think about, or what that means potentially for women's football in Bristol. But we'll have to wait and see what will happen for that. Last week we did have the news, didn't we, that the season was over. That was on Monday.
Yeah, we saw a statement that was put out by the FA, and obviously each of the WSL clubs had kind of given their own response to that. So kind of, you know, messages from the clubs saying that the season was over, but standings not yet having been decided. But I think it was a good idea that they at least say it's over, because probably one of the worst things would be to be in limbo. You know, players trying to stay match fit, not sure if they're going to finish the season. Whereas actually, you know, your schedule will totally change if you know, if this is essentially time off, and then you would have rest time and then start your pre-season. So yeah, it's good news that it's a definite answer, and it sounded as though most of the clubs were happy with the decision. because they didn't feel like they could safely fulfill all the criteria for playing games. So I think it was the main concern, keep staff safe, and they didn't feel like they could do it, probably.
And as we're recording this right now, we don't actually know the final standings, but one of the kind of things that we're, you know, relieved about as Bristol fans, that we won't get relegated.
Well, we're not at the bottom of the table, neither of the suggested ways of finishing the standings. So points per game,
mm-hmm.
and a weighted points per game, neither of those would see us relegated.
Yeah.
So that is good news. Obviously, we'd have preferred to see our players earn that, you know, really comprehensively win games, because we felt like the last game that we saw was a turning point. Finally got to see all of our signings play and get that away win at Birmingham. That felt like the start of a good thing. So yeah, I think we all felt that we could probably get ourselves out of it. Yeah, we'll wait and see. I think regardless of what happens, it would be a really sad way to get relegated, whoever goes down. And I'm sure somebody will, because, yeah, I don't think they're planning on increasing the size of the league, although I would also appreciate that.
Well, I think that was the plan, isn't it? Eventually to increase the size of the league. So they might, you know, out of fairness, they might do that and then bring, you know, two teams up from the championship. I don't know.
That would leave a very small championship, wouldn't it? So maybe they... I mean, I think it will affect the whole structure, won't it? If they increase the size of one league, they're going to have to... Because that would leave a 10-team championship.
Yeah, but...
That's not a season, is it?
No, but
that's
they...
not enough.
It might be possibilities for promotion. I mean, who's going to... Who even knows? I mean, what... Who? We don't know if the teams are going to be there. I mean, that was one... You know, one of the things that... was quite chilling when I went to the Football Collective conversation, you know, talking about how quickly, you know, liquidation or, you know, the collapse of football teams can happen. It can be overnight. After this crisis, there's so many unknowns. There'll be a lot of number crunching going on at the moment and figuring out how to, you know, do this fairly in all different ways. So, yeah, it's a difficult time, but this is the time of year when players start to, you know, announce via their social media channels that they're leaving clubs. Often one of the things that I think has been really useful in a way about the time for reflection, the pause for reflection around women's football, has been the quality of reporting and information about things like contracts, the nature of contracts. So I think again on the Football Weekly show they had a lawyer on talking about what the contracts are like, and very, very short term, very, very precarious work. But, you know, I think it was in just soon after lockdown, it was announced that Jazz and Yana had signed contracts for next season. It would be nice if other players signed as well, if it's possible. But, yeah, at least we've got them. Got two people on the team sheet. And Chloe Legazzo.
There we go. Play a triangle.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's...
I mean, yeah. Who can speculate? You can't speculate on a contract at the moment, can you? I think, no, nobody knows what's going to happen. Nobody knows when it's going to start again. I mean, you've told me that there's a start date for the WSL, haven't you?
But yeah, I think the projected start date is the 27th of September.
So we'll see what that looks like in reality.
So I put a call out asking for contributions for this final podcast of the season, for people to share their thoughts on how it's all gone. And Rich, who's the founder of Bristol City Women's Supporters Club, was actually the only person who replied. So thanks for doing that, Rich.
Well done, Rich. Can always be counted on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, one of a few, along with me and Shahan as well, very active on the social media. And he has said, I'm going to quote, "Don't forget to talk about the negatives in what really was a disaster of a season. The Van der Linden debacle," so referring there to Vita Van der Linden, who played for us for half the season and then left the club for whatever reason. Not really sure why. Maybe she didn't like it or wasn't getting on. There's a whole host of reasons, isn't there, why.
To be fair, she was probably living up by Parkway or something and thought, this is atrocious, I'm going.
Yeah, It's
I would.
yeah, the Rutherford issue. So Ella Rutherford, who went out on loan to first Crystal Palace and then to Leicester. She was obviously a big favourite with the fans last season, and kind of young, passionate, temperamental in some respects, but definitely an exciting talent. So I hope, you know, she might come back, who knows? It's like all of the other things. And the defence that couldn't stop conceding goals, I mean, that...
We conceded a lot of goals.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, a lot of goals. But
I go to football matches to see goals, so...
Yeah, doesn't matter if it's the other team,
doesn't
is it?
Doesn't matter if it's 15-0 from Arsenal.
It was 11-1, wasn't it?
Ugh. I mean, aggregate or whatever.
Yeah.
Aggregate was probably like 25-2. Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely a low point. It was awful, actually, wasn't it, that match?
Yeah, yeah, that was unwatchable.
Mm.
Yeah. But, you know, bounce back.
Did bounce back.
Got a couple of big 1-0s.
Massive 1-0s. We can talk a bit more about the triumphs, the very few triumphs that there were. It's a midfield that was on the whole invisible, he also said. That was a big problem, actually, for a lot of the season.
So we've had a lot of injury problems this year. A lot of injury problems. Most of the defence have been injured at some point, haven't they? Especially centre-halves just going. Carla Humphrey getting injured quite early on didn't really help, did it? But we got some new signings, we got some midfielders, and the main benefit of the signing those midfielders was meaning that other players weren't having to play out of position. So getting more from the current squad by including some new players. So having the main example that I saw was John coming in, made Liv Chance look twice the player, because finally there was someone who played close enough to her for her to actually pass the ball. She was actually, the time she played alongside John, she looked like a proper box-to-box midfielder. She was really mobile. Her and John were passing the ball to one another and looked like, if they could carry on doing that, they looked like the type of pair that could control a game. Obviously, it's quite a, you know, I think it's quite a physical game in England. So that, you know, I did notice John getting fouled a bit, but, you know, getting fouled means that you're comfortable on the ball. Like, it means that you will have the ball at your feet regardless of who else is around you, and that level of kind of confidence, I think that impacted the other players hugely. So yeah, I think the signings made the other players look better because they were probably just playing out of position or out of formation or not to their strengths. So yeah, the signings I thought were really good, and towards the very end of the matches we saw, we just started having a visible midfield. So that filled me with a bit of hope.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it would have been pretty exciting, actually. I mean, one of the things I found it actually a very exciting season, even though it was, you know, pretty grim, actually. Some of the performances before Christmas and just after Christmas were, you know, horrendous, actually. Particularly the home form is just baffling. It was the most exciting season that I've had as a Bristol fan since, probably since the exciting Mark Sampson 2012-2013 season. You know, it was I think the peril as well, the potential peril of relegation. I mean, if you can't be in a champion, you know, in a title winning race, that a relegation dogfight can be quite exciting, if not, you know, terrifying as well. So yeah, it was a funny season, and
it was hugely inconsistent, though, wasn't it? So getting absolutely battered away to Arsenal, winning at Man United, losing all your home games, just a weird, you can't call it. You just had no idea what was going to happen.
But building a really good squad of players, you know, if everybody was fit. And the new additions that were brought in, there's a lot of potential there for, you know, building a really excellent side. It's just a shame we haven't seen them, and hopefully they'll stay together, or at least the core of the group will stay together. I think it's inevitable that some will move on, because that always happens with Bristol anyway. All the best players get poached, or they leave, or their contracts run out. You know, it happens.
Well, thanks to Rich.
Yes, and Rich also did mention his final point was the star player that wasn't played, and obviously referring there to Ebony Salmon's super sub performances, where she came on and was very effective in her role in the team. It's interesting to imagine what it would be like to have Ebony Salmon there up front for the whole game, but there's obviously reasons why. I imagine there must be reasons and rationale for, you know, unleashing her for that, you know, that crucial point in the game.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what those reasons are, do we? She's a very young player. She's a very good player. But I'm sure there were reasons for it. I mean, don't forget, we call her a super sub, so it's very effective to come on at that point in the game and score. Like, that's a good idea. I know, obviously, like, we lost a lot of games where she didn't start, and you kind of think, oh, if she'd have played longer in this game, she'd have had a greater impact. But yeah. Like I say, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We don't know what her state is in terms of, is she recovering from an injury? Is she trying to maintain a certain level of fitness whilst being injured? Is it better to play 25 minutes than not at all, you know, for weeks afterwards? Or, you know, we don't really know. She doesn't look injured, but nobody does when they're actually playing, do they?
Mm.
But you never really know what's going on behind the scenes. So, I don't think any manager would deliberately sabotage their chance of winning.
No, indeed. And I think it's that thing about just using your, you know, the tools that you have in your toolbox and using them most effectively. And to celebrate the amazingness of Ebony Salmon, this is a special montage that Shahan has put together of the Oxford Revolution theme tune, the theme tune which was written by my friend Annie Gardner, and clips from commentary where she is scoring goals. So enjoy this.
Rare occasion, looking to cause some issues. Here's Salmon. Oh, she scored! And Bristol City had stunned Chelsea. Wait. Could she get the shot away? Oh, lovely finish by Charlie Wellings. Drills it into the far corner. Webbing and Salmon through here for Bristol City. Yana Daniels in support, gets on the end of that, picks it off the post. Well, it's gone goal crazy here in the opening minutes of the second half. We substitute with a shot which was never going to beat Sophie Bagley. And Bristol City have turned this match on its head.
Okay, so in order to mark the end of this season, the 2019-2020 season, and also to celebrate the fact that we are staying up, unless for some reason the FA decides to relegate the worst goal difference, which they can't, they won't do that.
Okay.
So to celebrate that, we've put together our top 10 favourite moments of the season, and they're not really moments actually, are they? Some of them are kind of concepts or ideas or people, but altogether we've picked out 10 things that have made us really happy to be Bristol City Women's fans for this year. So let's get going with that. So here we go. Number 10.
It's Bagger's epic time wasting against Man United.
Right, maybe think they're scraping the barrel a little bit, but if you watch back on the FA player this match, as we did, because for some reason, well, we couldn't get up to Manchester, like Rich, to watch the game live. And we couldn't watch it live on the FA player because something was happening. Back in the days when you were allowed to go out and do things, something was on. So we watched it back on the FA player. And the whole time, we just marvelled at how long Baggers took to put the ball down, to make sure her boots were completely free of mud and grass before she were to kick the ball, to make sure her hair was okay and her gloves were really securely fastened before she did anything. I fully, fully admire that And speaking as a goalkeeper in my previous life, I was a goalkeeper. I also got given a free kick in the area against me about 10 minutes into a game once because the ref thought I was time wasting. So I just really appreciate what Baggers was doing there because it is a skill. And to not have been... Did she get booked, actually?
I think she
got booked towards the end, but, you know...
And it really annoyed the Man United fans.
It annoyed people so much. Yeah. And they just couldn't handle it.
They couldn't handle it.
They couldn't handle the script that had already been written that Ebony Salmon would score the winning goal against them. They couldn't handle that. The fate.
The fate.
But that's who they've got beef with. Not Baggers.
Exactly. Fate. Fate, indeed.
So, bigger than Baggers.
And it's... it is. And I think there's really... I think I heard a story about how Tanya Oxtoby got the team in on like New Year's Day, didn't she? Or the day, New Year's Day into training.
They
had the game
story.
on the 6th. I think she talked about it on one of the interviews that did on with Faye Carruthers, who obviously we love. She said that she got them in on New Year's Day. She was like, you know, I know what you do on New Year's Eve, and you know, get in there, and they were ready. They were ready to upset the apple cart. They were ready to make their own fate that day. And what a massive 3 points that was.
It was a massive 3 points. So well done, Baggers.
Well done, Baggers, for
clean
time.
Sheet.
Yeah.
Loads of time wasting. Absolutely brilliant. So well done.
Yeah.
So there we go. That was number 10. So it's number 9.
Number 9 is, let me get to my list. Vixens in Disguise.
Vixens in Disguise. Yes, well, you've hosted many a former vixen at the Stoke Gifford Stadium, and it's always nice to give them a little rendition of You're a Vixen in Disguise. So obviously this is a song we sing to former vixens, former Bristol players, who come back and play against us. And it's meant to be nice, light-hearted, kind-spirited thing. We do. We might give him a little boo. One of my favourite reactions was Lucy Staniforth. She was just about to take a free kick, and we sang it to her. And before she took the free kick, she just looked over and smiled at us. So I thought that was quite good, because nobody else really seems to get it. Yeah, probably a bit baffled by it.
Yeah, or don't even understand what
don't really
what
understand
we're saying.
The reference or the words or any of it, even though I think it's quite clear.
Yeah.
But she did. She understood, and she thought it was funny. So, you know, it's worth it.
So number 9, that's Vixens in Disguise.
Okay, so number 8.
Number 8 is, oh my goodness, where am I? 12 Days of Vixens, more vixens, more singing.
Well, this is a podcast primarily about the vixens, so
yeah,
it's going to keep propping up, isn't it?
It is. So 12, this was an ambition of mine for some years to sing the 12 days of Christmas, but the 12 days of Vixens, and we did it this year. And we sang it at the Arsenal match, where you can hear it quite clearly. And Robin Cowan said about us, these guys could record an album, just with reference to how many songs we were singing. So, and possibly the length of that song. So
that's a good 3 or 4 minutes. That one.
Oh,
isn't
it was longer than that. It went on for a really long time.
It's a very long song, but
it was very really dissynchronous, and it
you
almost sounded
song sheet. So didn't you?
I did.
So everybody knew the lyrics.
I thought it almost sounded like an experimental kind of sound choir, the way in which it was sung the first time, but I think the second time it was a bit more in tune, a bit more in time.
Yeah, I think we got it. It was worth it, but for all the effort, it's a real shame that we can only sing it at a couple of matches. But it's there, the format is there.
The format is there.
And we can just keep rolling it out.
The Sophie Bagley as the first one, it scans so well, so I hope Sophie Bagley is a Bristol player next time, because it fits so well with the song.
Absolutely. Number 7.
Number 7 is, oh my goodness, winning the FA Cup.
We didn't.
No, but we did beat Durham in the third round of the FA Cup, and I got to hold up my fake FA Cup that I made.
So you've named that winning the FA Cup because we beat Durham.
You know, it was a big, I think, you know, let's set the scene. It was a rainy day, and hardly anyone was there. I mean, you know, if you're worried about social distancing and women's football, you know, go to the Stoke Gifford, particularly for an FA Cup match against Durham. There was, I think it was about seven, maybe 7 spectators, and it was raining. But we were all there, like, clumped together. And, you know, our home form was terrible. And it went into extra time, didn't it? And Katie...
I've totally blanked it out.
It did go into extra time, and Katie Robinson scored a goal.
Oh, I remember now. Yes.
Yeah, it was great.
And that was a really nice moment for her.
Yeah, it was a nice moment for everyone because we won a match.
And she'd actually been starting to play pretty well this season.
Yep.
Like, she's a really young player. And for her to come on and actually make such a big contribution, that was amazing. So yeah, great stuff. Okay, so you're calling that winning the FA Cup.
Yeah, winning the FA Cup. So we won the third round and obviously lost the next round in a horrible and embarrassing way. But let's not talk about that.
Okay, so we won the FA Cup. That was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, just locate it with your finger, please. It's number six.
Number six is Tanya's sweary interview.
Oh, we loved this. I don't really engage with social media an awful lot. Not really interested in it. But it was pointed out to me that there was an interview with Tanya on like an Australian TV or Australian media site that you could watch. And it's quite a long interview, and it had like footage of the training ground. And the one thing that stood out for me was just the amount of beeping going on.
Because torrent of expletives.
It was potty mouth. Absolute potty mouth. I couldn't believe it. But... I mean, it was funny, wasn't it?
It was. It was
really,
funny.
Really funny.
And then Rich made a T-shirt that says.
Rich made a T-shirt with the best quote. So
it says, you know, do you want to win on Saturday or not? Yeah. Sunday even, which I hope we make a flag out of, but that would obviously.
I don't think that's very child friendly.
It's not child friendly, unfortunately, and we don't want to, you know, tarnish the community togetherness, family friendly brand. Number six.
That was number six. Okay, are you ready now? It's number five.
Number five is getting our jazzy back.
Getting our jazzy back. Oh, it's lovely having our jazzy back, isn't it?
It is.
She was a real fixture and firm favourite at Bristol. And then she left. Fair enough. Don't blame her. And then she came back.
She did.
Prodigal defender. Yeah, she came back. It was great. It was nice to sing a song. We got our jazzy back in order to mark that. And I think she's had a really good season. She played really well.
Yeah, in a defence that's been, you know, I'd say very leaky. But
leaky, yeah.
Great distribution as well. See that pass that led to Ebony Salmon's winner against Birmingham and the tracking back to stop Sam Kerr getting her first goal in the English game against Chelsea at Meadow Park. Those are the two highlight moments, but you know, definitely amazing to see Jazz over the years mature and have an injury-free season as well, because her career mid-career seemed to be quite plagued with injuries. So it's good to see her not be injured and have a consistent run out. And you know, hopefully next season when it starts, I'd like to see her be club captain, because I'm assuming Lauren Dykes will retire and other people. Like Frankie Brown, I expect she'll retire as well next season.
You think?
Yeah, I do. I think that, you know, they're both quite old now. I can't imagine.
Well, I got the feeling that Lauren Dykes would probably be retiring. She was playing less and less, but still around. So I got the impression that she may be retiring. But then she's still playing international football as well, isn't she?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Still kind of pretty busy.
Yeah, and I think she's hopefully going to go into the coaching setup, or I think that's the plan.
Taking us into number four.
Number four is the new arrivals.
New arrivals.
Just after the Christmas period, the transfer window.
So, coming in was Faye Bryson. Always look on the Bryson of life. Great signing. Loads of energy. Really, really good player. Great defender, great attacker. Perfect. Kind of play a counter-attacking game if we need to. But yeah, I was really impressed with like being an attacker and a defender. That's amazing. So she's a really, really good
and
addition.
Passion as well, and just engagement.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, she's got like a really nice attitude and seemed to really want to be at Bristol, mm-hmm. which is great. So yeah, she was really welcome, and she got herself into the starting lineup pretty quick, didn't she?
Yeah.
And yeah, we really like her. She's great. We also got Megan Wynn.
brilliant as well.
Who turned up.
But just a lone player, I think. She's actually a Tottenham player, isn't she? So she's not...
Still, actually... it's a good acquisition. She played really well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she's obviously feeling pretty confident at the moment. We saw her score that goal for Wales.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like a really good, regardless of how long for, like a great addition to the squad. Certainly gave the fans a bit of a boost in that first half that she played on her first game. She had loads of energy and yeah, it was really great to see a new face kind of getting involved straight away. So yeah, and then who else came in this season?
John Giao.
Brilliant, like an amazing signing. Someone who's so experienced, international footballer, just amazing, brilliant. So hopefully it's great to have a signing like that, because obviously we have a lot of young players at Bristol City because of the strength of the academy, which is good. It means, you know, lots of new players are coming in all the time, but it also means that you don't always have a lot of really good experienced international players around. So yeah, a great person to add in. Who else has there been?
And Chloe and her tattoos.
Chloe Legazza and her tattoos, yeah. So is that everybody that's come in?
It was everybody who came in at that point.
At that point. So that's mm-hmm. that is really good business. So yeah, number three.
Number three is away days.
Away days. Yeah. We've had away days before, haven't we? Playing against, we've been to some Yeovil games, been to some Birmingham games, been to, when we were in the Championship, we went to an away day. But this season, we managed to get to two of the best games that we played all season. So we went to Reading at the Majeski, where we had a thrilling, is it 3-3?
A thrilling 3-3 draw.
Thrilling 3-3. I mean, who'd have thought it?
It was really thrilling. Amazing. And then we watched it again, didn't we, during lockdown, because they replayed it. And,
we did, yeah. And it was brilliant again, wasn't it?
It was brilliant.
Thrilling.
It was thrilling again.
So that was a great away day. And that was also arguably the first time that we sat together.
As a group.
As a supporters club. Mm-hmm. So that was a really nice moment.
Yeah.
Where we did that at an away day. And then the very last game that we attended was the Birmingham away day.
Yeah.
Which again we saw as a supporters club, and a very noisy supporters club at that. Number two
is Ebony Salmon Three Ways.
Salmon Three Ways. Yeah, we want it to sound like a menu, don't we?
Yeah.
First of all, the seared salmon.
The seared salmon against Reading, round and the keeper, amazing, just an amazing goal. No matter how many times I see that, I'm like, how did she do that?
Incredible.
Amazing, amazing balance, amazing composure. Just one on one. Is there anyone better?
No.
I've struggled to think of a better one on one striker that I've ever seen play for Bristol.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, I was thinking like Jodie Taylor.
Yeah,
that's the kind of comparison I was thinking of then, with that like kind of that kind of quality of finish. Anyway,
Beth England as well this season.
Yeah,
just in that context. I mean, I don't think she's like she's not.
She can't do all those things that all those people can do. But yeah, the thing that she does incredibly well is
one on one, and running at people like that. And the Manchester. So that's the smoked salmon.
The smoked salmon. Yeah, was the Man United.
The Man United goal, where she just, like, you know, ran at loads of players, went round the side, hasn't got hope in hell, slots it through Mary Earp's legs, boom, 1-0, bag of time wasting, away day win, Man United hate us.
And then I need to think of one other way.
Vegan salmon.
I was going to say, fake. Like a whole party salmon.
No, I think you've got to have a fake salmon.
Or like a wild, just in the water salmon picked up by a bear.
So that's the against Birmingham.
Yes, well done.
Yeah, okay, yeah, because that is another brilliant one-on-one.
Yeah.
You know, again, no matter how many times I see that, I'm always just like, yes!
Big goals, big games.
Small player, great composure.
there we go. So salmon three ways. Thanks, Ebony.
Must also highlight her other two goals in the league, where she scored against Liverpool, which got us that point,
mm-hmm.
which is, I mean, I'm not sure if she meant to do that, but she probably did. It was one that, it looked one of those goals that looked like a cross, but actually is a goal. And the finish against Chelsea, which was really good as well.
Great stuff. So salmon five ways.
Salmon five ways, really.
Yeah.
But three ways for those memorable two wins and a draw.
Yeah.
But getting us those points, you know, without Ebony, we'd probably be relegated.
Well.
Certainly wouldn't have any goals. Coming in at number one.
What is it?
Number one is the Bristol City Women's Supporters Club.
Right. So obviously the club, Supporters Club was founded last season.
Yeah, so it's the second supporters club, so, I have to say, because there was one before.
Yeah, so the current iteration of the Bristol City Women's Supporters Club. Obviously, there are loads of people who've supported the club over the years, and some of them have organised, and some of them have just been fans. But Rich Pace started a supporters club last year in order to try and get people to, you know, come together at matches and share their fandom together. And this year it really took off, because we started to stand together, started to sing together, started to talk to other fans, and it's been really nice to have people turn up for maybe their first Bristol City Women's game and be able to chat to them. And yeah, it's been really, really enjoyable. Been talking to loads of fans. Some of them have been asking why we sing certain things, and it's been really nice to explain to them about, you know, the history of the club, and talking to them about the Vixens and why we sing certain songs and who certain people are, and that's why we sing a song for them. And yeah, it's been really great, and it's been really enjoyable to hang out with the supporters club and watch the games with them. Makes it really enjoyable.
Yeah, it's been lovely to be able to share that passion and excitement with other people, and, you know, begin to build a bit of a, you know, a body of resources around the club, as you say, creating a more welcoming atmosphere, but also documenting stuff we've done, like the songbook. We did make we documented the songs in the songbook, and during lockdown we've been having a few meetings, and also affiliated with Football Supporters Association, and that's been really interesting to talk to them and learn more about supporters groups and those communities. And yeah, it's really exciting. So, and I think a lot more will be done within the framework of the sports club in the future.
Yeah, so well done to all the supporters.
Yeah, well done to all the supporters. We are the best thing that happened. We are number one.
Yeah.
Definitely. So that's it from the Oxterby Revolution. This is the final episode of this particular iteration of the podcast. I've been DM Withers.
Well, I've been Nat Brown.
And if you've enjoyed listening to the podcast at all across its various different episodes, feel free to, you know, give it a rating, share it with your friends. But we'll be back when the football's back. So until then, goodbye.
Looking to cause some issues. Is Salen? Oh, she scored! And Bristol City have stunned Chelsea. Wellings. Could she get the shot away? Oh, lovely finish by Charlie Wellings. Drills it into the far corner. Wellings Salen through here for Bristol City. Yana Daniels in support, gets on the end of that, picks it off the post. Well, it's gone goal crazy here in the opening minutes of the second half. The substitute with a shot which was never going to beat Sophie Bagley. And Bristol City have turned this match on its head.